Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
It was Holocaust Day this week, and I'm going to be sharing a little bit about that. We're also going to be talking about something that Jews have been doing ever since the first week of Passover, and that is counting the Omer. What is counting the Omer, and why is it important? Never really interested me when I was a kid, but as an adult, I can really appreciate it, and I want to share that knowledge with you as well. We're going to be speaking with Rivka Levy. She's an author and motivational speaker, in a sense, and she's going to be talking about an article that she wrote on Israel News Talk Radio called Counting the Omer, the Original Self-Help Program. Self-help program. What is that about? And it's free. Okay. And if I have time, I'm going to be sharing with you one of the only in Israel stories. I love sharing those stories on the air because it's just, you know, it's that little spark in your heart where you just love being in Israel. So we'll share something that happened to me just before, about a week ago, and also a little personal story about my son who is in the army. So all of that's going to be on the show today. You can call in, by the way, and join in as well. If you have any comments or questions that you want to ask or a special topic you want to talk about, you can do that. Our numbers are on our homepage at israelnewstalkradio.com. Remember, israelnewstalkradio.com. At the top of the page, you'll see our phone numbers there for the United States and for Israel. And I'd love to have you call in and we can chat. All right. And so all this is coming up. You can join me in the chat room as well. That's the orange button on our player. Or if you go to our website at israelnewstalkradio.com, you just click on the orange button that says chat room and you can join me there as well. I'd love to see you in there and you can write your comments and I can read them during the breaks. And it's really nice to have you. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with me. All right. So hope you call in. And again, I'm going to be sharing at least a little bit of a Holocaust story, something very interesting, and only an Israel story, which is a little bit more upbeat. In fact, it's a lot more upbeat. And counting the Omer. We're going to learn something on the show, and it's self-help. It's going to make your life better. And mine. Cool bars. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Heather Dean. Is your home sweet home just a place to hang your hat? Check out The Modern Jewish Home every Wednesday at 5 p.m. for practical advice from a wide variety of experts and innovators about relationships, getting organized, growing your business, nourishing your body and soul, and even having a good laugh. So make yourself at home every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Israel time on The Modern Jewish Home here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Right. This is the Tamar Yonah Show, and I do politics, I do rants, I do in-depth interviews, and I also do only in Israel stories, and that's what we're going to start out with on the show today, just because I want to get that in. It's a little bit of a personal story. I don't really share that many personal stories on the radio. Usually I'm so curious about other people. I don't talk that much about what's going on in my life, but I did want to share this, and it was really cute. By the way, I did post this on my Facebook page. If you go to my public page for Tamar Yonah, you'll see that story there. It's entitled Only in Israel Story. So this is what's happening. So, excuse me. So my dryer has been broken for quite a while. I ordered a part from the United States. I get it in there and it's working now, but it's making a lot of noise and it takes like three loads to dry. So my dryer was basically kaput. And then cleaning for Passover, my son, who was doing the stove, actually broke one of the burners. And we're talking about an American appliance here. It's one of those big caloric, you know, Maytag stoves. And when he took it out, the whole thing had just rusted. And when he was cleaning it, it just broke so easily. So I call up the American appliance fixer guy. I'm not going to give out his name because I don't know if he wants me to share the story, but I'll just say that I call him and, you know, it doesn't work out that he's going to come. It was before Pesach. So after Pesach, or the Passover holiday, I get a call from the Mr. Fix-It guy. And he says to me, Mrs., you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to come out tomorrow morning. And this was last week, actually, when this happened. This was last week. So what happens? So he tells me that he's going to come in the late morning, early afternoon. And I tell him, well, that was going to be a Thursday. He's calling me on a Wednesday. I tell him, listen, if you're coming tomorrow on Thursday in the late morning, early afternoon, you've got to finish by the late afternoon because I have to go with my family to the Kotel, the Western Wall, because my son is having his IDF swearing-in ceremony. So he says, so do I. I also have to go. And I said, yes, it's at the Kotel at the Western Wall. He says, yes. And I said, is your son in Kfir? Which is it's a brigade. It's one of the actually youngest brigades in the IDF. It means lion or a lion cub, Kfir. It's a beautiful name. And he says, yes, my son is too. So it was just so funny that here I tell him, you have to finish early because I have to be someplace tonight. He has to be at the same place tonight. We barely know each other. And yet our sons are fighting shoulder to shoulder together. They are together. And here the parents are just doing, like, you know, the business, the Mr. Fix-It and the customer. And little do they know that their sons are serving together in the same unit and we both have to be at the same place. I thought it was quite cute and quite funny. And actually, when I got to the Western Wall, I did see him and his family. I met his wife. I met his other daughter, the sister of the soldier, and it was all like one big family. It was just amazing. And in fact, I'm just remembering now, I did go live. It was the first time I ever went live on Facebook. So if you want to see that film, that video that I did, it's very, very short. You can go to my Facebook page, to Mariona, and you can find it there. Just scroll down because I think I've posted some other things since then. So that was my only in Israel story. By the way, if you're listening and you want to call in and share your own Only in Israel story, I would absolutely adore that. I would love it because I love Only in Israel stories. So if you're listening live, that means if it's Monday evening between 8 to 9 p.m. Israel time, or if it's Monday afternoon, 1 to 2 p.m. New York time, that means that we are live and you can call in and you can share your Only in Israel story. All right. In the next segment, we're going to be talking about the counting of the Omer. This is something that we do. It's the 49 days between the holiday of Passover, which culminates with the holiday of Shavuot, which is the holiday of the giving of the Torah. Now, my husband, for all of you who don't know, is an Orthodox rabbi. And he has a Devar Torah, a story that he tells, which is very, very beautiful. And it meant a lot to me. It made a lot of sense. I like things that make sense. And I share this every once in a while because I think it's really a good focus point to really get our lives back on the right track. And he compares it with the United States of America, the counting of the Omer with the United States of America. How does that happen? Why? Why is he doing that? I'm going to explain to you. You know, when we had the American Revolution against England back in the 1700s, the reason was that people, well, the real reason was because they didn't want to pay the taxes, but let's look at the more beautiful picture. They wanted freedom. They wanted more freedom, the American people in the colonies. And America was going to be, what is the tagline for America, the United States of America? It's the pursuit of happiness, the pursuit of happiness. And everybody wants to be what they want to be, do what they want to do. There's no rules. We're free. We can do whatever we want. It's a free country. And that's a wonderful thing. However, when there are no reins or borders around freedom, it could become actually detrimental. It could be something that is harmful to society. How do I explain that? We have people who are, they think that it's okay to go around naked or to go around and flashing people. Hey, it's a free country. I'm not hurting anybody else. It's just me, you know, do whatever I want to do. Take drugs, whatever it is, that it's a harmful thing that you're doing. And that is going off the track of making your life a good life and building a good and strong society that is magnanimous, that spreads goodness throughout the world. So when you have a freedom without any borders, without any reins on that, it could get messy and all over the place and confusing, and people are not going on the right path in life. Now let's bring this to the Passover holiday and the counting of the Omer. We have Passover, which is what? It's the holiday of freedom. Just like you have in the United States, they wanted their freedom. But it wasn't just, okay, God takes the Jews out of Egypt, out of slavery, and now we're free. Now we can have the pursuit of happiness. Whatever makes you happy, you can do whatever you want to do. That wasn't how it is. Because in Judaism, when God took us out of Egypt, it wasn't just to be a free people in our own homeland. It was to be a light unto the nations. We had a path that we had to walk. And how do we walk this path? What rules? What are the borders, the boundaries, the limitations? And that is the Torah, the Bible. And that is what we get on the holiday of Shavuot, where Moses goes up and climbs Mount Sinai and he gets the Torah and he brings it down, the Ten Commandments, and he teaches the people, and we get the oral Torah as well. And this guides the Jewish people what we can do and what we cannot do. And the real freedom is having that choice, what we call bichirat chofshi, to be able to choose to do good rather than go with our passions or what we are a slave to, what we are addicted to, or what we just feel like, I want to do it because it feels good. But you know what feels good for you can hurt other people. And that actually I could go into and do a whole other show about that one. But the beauty of Passover and the counting of the Omer, the 49 days until we reach the holiday of Shavuot, when we got the Torah, when we received the Torah and can now live by it and become a good, just society, know what is good and know what is not good, what is good and what is evil, and to make those right choices and to know that we do have limitations. Maybe just, I have 2 minutes left. Maybe I'll just, you know, veer off for a second. I always remember, you know, how divorce rates started to go up in the United States in the 60s when the real freedom, hey, we're free. People are taking drugs and free sex and free drugs and free everything. And divorces, because before that it was a stigma if you came from a divorced family. And now everybody's doing it because, hey, I don't feel good in this marriage anymore. It's boring. Or I don't get along with her anymore. She used to be nice. Now she's mean. She's, you know, we're arguing all the time. So instead of working on the marriage, instead of thinking of your partner as your holy husband or your holy wife and treating each other as your significant other that is there to help you through life. You've made a contract together. You got married. You vowed to be married, to help each other, to make a family. What do they say even in America? In sickness and in health, right? And then all of a sudden, the guy's got a cute secretary, young, pretty, not bogged down with kids. She listens to him. She's attentive. When he gets home, his wife is nagging. You take the kids. I've had a tough day. I also work, blah, blah, blah. Who needs that? They leave. And I remember the scene, if you've ever seen Gone with the Wind, where Scarlett is in the barn with her love that she thinks is her love, Ashley. And this is just after they're back on the plantation. They've worked so hard and her hands are chapped, her fingers are cut and bleeding, and her sisters hate her because they have to work in the fields. And she says, Ashley, let's just run away. Let's just run away and go and be happy. Something like that, she said. And he said to her something akin to, we could, but Oh, and she says, we have nothing to lose, Ashley. We have nothing to lose. And he says, except for our honor. And when he said that, she immediately gave up that dream because she realized you can't just go and do whatever you want, whatever you feel, because you can. Because people have responsibilities and they have honor. And there is something good about honor. I'm not talking about the honor where they're killing their daughters in Islam. But you have a wife, you have children, you work on that because maybe he runs away with his secretary and he's happy. But what about his kids? Are they happy that their father ran off? Where is your honor as a human being and a responsible human being? All right, we'll be right back with more about the Omer.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the Phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
All right, so in the last segment, I was talking about Counting the Omer, the original self-help program. Actually, I was talking about Counting the Omer, but now we have someone joining us on the show who wrote an article that's on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com called Counting the Omer, the original self-help program. Now, let me introduce our guest. Her name is Rivka Levy. She's a writer, journalist, and blogger. She's the author of several books on God-based holistic health with a Jewish twist, including the book called 49 Days, an Interactive Journal of Self-Development. Rivka Levy made Aliyah from the United Kingdom in 2005, over 10 years ago, and she now lives in Jerusalem. So welcome to the show, Rivka Levy.
Hi, thanks, Tamar. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you on. So maybe you can just briefly explain what the Counting of the Omer is to our listeners.
Sure. So until a few years back, I actually had no idea what Counting the Omer was, and I thought it was something to do with the barley festival and the wheat harvest and I don't know what. And then I actually had a very crazy period of time straight after Pesach when there was a lot of intense things going on. And someone mentioned to me that the period of Counting the Omer is this time when God is sending down all this different energy each week to kind of get us to focus on particular areas in our life that need work or that need looking at. And then once they explained that to me, I started to research it, and I found out that it's actually a very incredibly rich spiritual time where we have all this energy coming down the pipe from Hashem to, like, work on our character traits, our beliefs, and, you know, different bits of our lives that we need to, like, change or improve. And that, in a nutshell, is Counting the Omer. It's all about the internal work, and it's got very little to do with the barley festival, the barley harvest.
Okay, so the Omer basically comes from the barley harvest. It has something to do with that, but the counting of the 49 days between Passover and Shavuot is the counting of the Omer, and each week is a different spiritual energy where we can actually work on our character defects and become better people. So why don't you take us through these 49 days, which comes out to 7 weeks? What is the first week that we're supposed to concentrate on as we stand and we say the bracha, the blessing over the Omer as we count it?
Right, so like you said, there's 7 weeks, and there's different takes. Like, different authors have different viewpoints about what each week actually stands for. So I'll tell you the Hebrew name, and then I'll tell you my take on it. So the first week, week one, in Hebrew it's called Hesed. So my take is that that's love and relationships. So, for example, like straight after Pesach, it's almost guaranteed, you know, after the Seder, Passover Seder, it's almost guaranteed that each of us had like some massive argument with family members or some very intense, challenging thing that came up, or, you know, like some, Hashem was asking us to like take a look and see what needs to change or what needs to get, you know, go in a different direction. So that's week one, love and relationships. The next week, week two, is called Gevurah in Hebrew. which I translated as self-improvement. So this is the week where we've got boundaries. We're currently in the week of Gavura this week, or self-improvement. Right. And again, the energy that's coming down is that we have to like look to see, you know, which areas of our life do we need to fix up. That's really like this week's energy. Next week, we're into ferret, which I've translated as truth. Right, so that's where we have to be like honest about things like, you know, are we eating too much chocolate cake? Could we really get up a bit earlier? You know, are we really like, you know, doing what we're meant to be doing in life? The next week after that is Netzach, which I translated as seeing the good, or seeing the point of specialness that each of us has, because each of us is unique in God's world. Each of us has like a unique job to do. And sometimes it's very easy to get, you know, with all the self-improvement, self-development, we can get so caught up in looking at the bad or the things that aren't quite there yet that we actually forget to look at all the tremendous good that we still have and our unique ability to shine God's light into the world. So that's week four, Netzach. Week five is Hod, which is translated as gratitude. So that's pretty self-explanatory. That's the week where we're like grateful that the toilet flushes and that we've got hot water in the shower and we've got food, you know, like the small things, you know, that we can breathe, we can see, right? That's the energy of week five.
You know, I just want to interrupt you here if I can. And that is, you know, I just read something very interesting. It was a beautiful post that someone posted on Facebook talking about gratitude, and that in the Shemona Esrei, that's the Amidah, the prayer, it's like the major prayer that the Jewish people have besides the Shema Yisrael, of course, is that when we bow down, when do we bow down? Of course, in the beginning and towards the end, but also in the middle where it says Modim, that we thank, that we have gratitude to God for all the goodness that he's done for us. And it's so important that we bow during that part.
Right. And also like Lag BaOmer is bang in the middle of the week of gratitude. And that's also, you know, like God's light in the world, that things can turn around. And, you know, it's a very joyful time, like that week. In the middle of that week, it's very joyful. So then the next week, week six, is called Yesod, which is the week where God's going to challenge us on our sense of purpose, right? He's going to really be asking us if we're doing, you know, do we really feel like we're doing something meaningful, right? Are we living meaningful lives? Are we seeing the point of like doing the mitzvahs? You know, like are we imbuing our day with like things that give us a sense of purpose? That's week six. And then the last week, week seven, which is leading up to Shavuot, when the Jewish people were given the Torah on the sixth of Siman, right, is the week of Malchut, which is the spiritual dimension, or what I like to say, you know, how we make God real in our life. So that's week seven. So again, like each day, we're looking at different aspects of this, because in each one of those weeks, we're working on each on all seven of those energies on a different day.
So basically, when we examine these seven aspects of what we're supposed to be working on, we can see exactly where the gaps are in our lives. This is what you're writing about in your article, and where we still need to work on these character defects, these gaps.
Right. So for example, like today, we're just leaving day 13. Like for anyone who's counting, we just left day 13, which is a day of self-improvement, focusing on sense of purpose. So for example, today, I don't know about you, maybe you also had the same thing tomorrow, but like today I spent so much of my day thinking about what am I doing with my life, right? And not even because I knew specifically it's day 13, right? I just had a lot of things that were being kind of sent throughout the course of the day that were kind of like challenging me to really think like, what am I doing with my life? What do I really need to work on? What do I really need to change? You know, what's required for me to start living the life that I'd really like to live? Right, and that's the sort of vibe, like we said, that's been coming down a week. But tomorrow, like the next day, day 14, right, is a day where it's going to be self-improvement, looking at the spiritual dimension. So I just wanted to tell you some of the exercises, because there are actually some other really great books out there. Like my book is really good, but there's actually some other great books out there that give us a guide that will tell us what's happening on each day, so that like four. You know, if you're prepared beforehand, then you can really make the most of the energy that's coming down. So one of those books is called Sefiros, and it's by Rabbi Yaakov Haber and Rabbi David Sedley. And that book, it has a nice explanation of each day, plus it has action points, and they've split it up. So you have an exercise to do each day between you and Hashem, and another one that's between you and people, and then another one that's between kind of you and yourself. And then there's another really good book that's called A Spiritual Guide to the Counting of the Omer, by Rabbi Simon Jacobson, and that also has a very nice explanation plus an exercise of the day. So I just wanted to let you know what the exercises are going to be for the next day, and then your listeners can also see if they can like pick this up like over the next 24 hours. So in Sephiroth, they tell us that the day, you know, number 14 is kingship within restraint, because like I said, each person, each author, each rabbi kind of has a different take on, you know, specifically what the words Malchut Shebegevura means. So they translated it kingship within restraint, and they're telling us that today, like from the next 24 hours on, is a day that we need to take charge and we need to be a king or a queen over our emotions and desires. They're saying that's the energy that's coming down. Rabbi Jacobson, on the other hand, is telling us that the day is all about what he calls nobility of discipline, right? That's his take on it. And he's telling us that we need to foster other people's self-respect, especially if we need to discipline someone. If we need to tell someone off or to, like, you know, we need to also make sure that we're fostering their self-respect. And then my take on the day is that it's the day of self-improvement, focusing on the spiritual dimension. That means we really need to take some time over the next 24 hours to talk to God about all the stuff we need to work on and fix, and to ask him to help us to do it.
You recently wrote a book. Help me with the title, because it's not in front of me. Something about the Diary of a Jewish Housewife?
Yeah, The Secret Diary of a Jewish Housewife.
The Secret, okay. Well,
is that book out yet? Because I remember seeing it on your website.
No, so that book's coming out at the end of May. So it's in the pipe. It's in the pipe currently, but it should be out at the end of May.
Oh, so it's just like another month. That sounds very exciting. Okay, so we'll have to have you back on again when that book is published, because I'm curious about The Secret Diary of the Jewish Housewife. Sounds like a television series, you know?
Yeah, so it's like Dallas, but not really.
Okay, like interesting. Dallas, you know, yeah. What's the other one? Dynasty,
a Jewish,
right?
Dallas.
All right, very good. Rivka Levy, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Let's just give out your website for anybody who wants to check out all of the things that you do there.
Yeah, it's www.amunaroma.com.
Spell it out for everybody.
EMUNAROMA.com.
Okay, I'm going to post that as well in the chat room. So if you want to go and get that, check out our website. It's really, really good. I like the person who does your website, by the way. It's really pleasing to the eye. I like it a lot.
Thank you.
All right, Rivka Levy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Tamar.
All right.
All right, and we have another 30 seconds or so until we end up. So I just want to invite you all. The next segment, I'm going to be alone with you. So if you want to call in and talk about any topic or anything you want to comment on or ask a question about, you can do so. Our number is on our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Top of the page in the middle, our numbers are there. Hope you'll call in. Otherwise, I'm going to talk about Yom HaShoah that we had this week. We'll be right back.
Jew haters, beware. Political hitman is here. Who's in my crosshairs? Who's in my hot seat? I'm Howie Silberger. Join me Sundays at noon Eastern, 7 Israeli, and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 9 Israeli, for Political Hitman, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. I want to say hello to all the people who are listening from around the world. Let's see, all over the United States, Israel, Sweden, gada gada hamor do Sweden, South Africa, hello, Canada, howdy, France, Germany, and Australia, to the land down under. Hi, everybody. It's nice to see you all listening in. Give us a call this segment, I'm Alone With You, and I'll take your calls on any topic you want to talk about. In the meantime, I'm going to talk about something interesting that my daughter actually told me today that she had read on the WhatsApp. If you don't have the WhatsApp app on your smartphone, you should get it. It's a really great app, by the way. Somebody wrote, his name that she got it from, at least, it's called Sur Erlich. And it's called Yom HaShoah and Yom HaZikaron. What does that mean? It means Holocaust Day and Memorial Day. And in Israel, you would already know this, that after Passover, the holiday of Passover, we have about a week or so later, we have Holocaust Remembrance Day, which is Yom HaShoah, which was this week. And then exactly a week later, we have Yom HaZikaron, which is Israel Memorial Day, to identify with all of the IDF soldiers who fell in battle or who were killed in service of their country, and also now for victims of Arab terror. And he said something very beautiful here, this Tzur or Erlich. He says here, two memorial days back to back every year. One, so that we can see and understand how much it costs us to have a country of our own, right? Because we have Memorial Day. It costs us lives, God forbid, to be able to protect our borders, to protect our people, what we didn't have in the Holocaust. So one, that we should be able to see the cost of what it is to have a country. And the other, so you can see what the cost is to not have a country. So if you take a look at the amounts of people who were killed in defending the land of Israel and also victims of Arab terror, there are at least 23,000 dead from the wars that we've had here in Israel, including Arab terror, around 23,000 or more people. But when we didn't have a state, when we didn't have the state of Israel, it cost us 6 million men, women, children, babies, communities, everything, worlds lost. So that's something to really think about. So I'll just say this again very quickly, as my daughter told it to me, a week apart, two memorial days back to back every year, so that we can see how much it costs us to have a country of our own and how much it costs us not to. Just beautiful and interesting and very, very deep and touching. All right, I want to read to you something on this note. And again, if you want to call into the show and talk with me, you can, but you better do so now because we only have a few minutes left of the show. I want to read to you something that actually was in the news lately. And it really isn't news because we've known this for a long time, but a lot of people, put the wool over their eyes and don't know. But the Western allies, the Western countries that were fighting the Nazis, the good guys actually knew what was happening, because the whole excuse is, well, we didn't know. We didn't know what was happening. We only found out when we liberated the camps, but it was not true. I'm going to read you something from a book I'm holding in my hands right now called Thy Brother's Blood. It's from the Art Scrolls series, Judaescope series, The Orthodox Jewish Response During the Holocaust. And it says here, I'm reading from page 104, the Auschwitz protocols and pleas, PLEAS, and pleas to bomb Auschwitz. In April 1944, two escapees from Auschwitz, Rudolf Vraba and Alfred Wetzler, arrived in Slovakia just after the Nazis moved into Hungary. They had been at Auschwitz since the beginning, working in the administrative offices, which collected data on every aspect of the extermination process. They made their way to the Slovakian Jewish underground, and they warned that Auschwitz was being enlarged to accommodate Hungary's Jews, and under questioning by the underground, provided a 33-page statistical report on the camp's operations that became known as the Auschwitz Protocols. Now, these two guys who testified to this sent out a condensed Hebrew version to all Jewish groups in Hungary and Switzerland. On May 16th, the day after the Hungarian deportations to Auschwitz started, these guys began sending out their famous plea to bomb the camps, especially the railroad lines carrying 12,000 1,000 Jews there a day. I want to repeat that. The trains were carrying to their deaths 12,000 Jews a day. In all of our wars here in Israel, we've lost, sadly, close to 23,000 people. That's about 2 days of the Nazis shoving us in trains and then up the chimneys. 12,000 Jews a day. We beg them, bomb the railroads, bomb the camps. Even if some Jews die, it's better than 12,000 a day. He pointed out that these lines were being used also to transport military personnel and material for them. To make this short, I'm not going to read everything here, but to make it short, they went and they spoke. Let me look here so I can read this one sentence right. They traveled to speak with the military attachés of the Americans, the British, and the Russian embassies. The attachés were sympathetic. I have to stop there for a second. They were sympathetic. They weren't outraged. As human beings, they didn't have to be lovers of Jews, just as a human being. They were sympathetic, but could not sway their governments. The specific British response was that the bombing that they did was done for strategic reasons, not humanitarian reasons. Can you believe that? They replied, "Sorry, our bombing is for strategic reasons and not for humanitarian reasons." I think that says it all when you look at the hypocritical West, unfortunately, because, like, you know, the West is about the best we've got in the world today. And even here we're seeing the hypocrisy and the apathy when Jews are being killed, 12,000 a day being shoved into trains and brought to Auschwitz and the death camps. And they're sympathetic. But, you know, you don't want to do it for humanitarian reasons. Then at least do it for strategic reasons, in that these trains were also bringing military equipment, right? It said here, they said, they were transporting military personnel and material. So bomb it for that reason if you're not going to do it for humanitarian reasons, you unhumanitarian person and country and leadership. Now, of course, not all the British are like them. We're talking about the leadership of Britain at that time, of England. Disgraceful. This is one of the reasons why we need a state of Israel, the state of Israel. I remember my father, who is a Holocaust survivor, and then made his way to the land of Israel, which was under the British mandate. And then when the British pulled out because the UN decided that they're going to have the partition plan, and as soon as we accepted it, the Arabs started attacking us, and we had to defend ourselves. And that was what came out to be the War of Independence, a war that we didn't want, a war. It was a time that we wanted to have peace, and they were going to split the land of Israel into two and give half to the Arabs, who today call themselves Palestinians. In those days, they would never do that because the Palestinians were the Jews in those days. But I digress. My father had gotten a case. He was with the other soldiers. They had gotten some crates of guns from Czechoslovakia because the good old West, including the United States of America, put an embargo on Israel. You see, the Arabs had guns. The Jews did not. If a Jew was caught with a gun under the British mandate, if they were caught with a gun to defend themselves, they were hung. It was a death sentence to own a gun if you were a Jew. And so my father gets this case with the other soldiers. They open up the crates and they've got the guns. They're packed in grease and they have to take all the guns out and start cleaning them, cleaning the grease off of them. And as they're doing that, he sees that on these guns that they got from Czechoslovakia, because they couldn't get guns from America, They had to get it on the black market and get it from Czechoslovakia any way they could. There were swastikas on these rifles, on these guns. And I remember leaning towards my father and very dramatically saying, "Dad, how did you feel holding these guns in your hands that have a swastika on them? These same guns that may have killed other Jewish people. How are you feeling?" And I was expecting a very, very dramatic answer. And his reply was, "Ugh, we were just glad to have guns." And that's the story. That's why we need a state of Israel, that there should never, ever be a Holocaust again. For anybody, by the way. You've been listening to The Tamar Yonah Show.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.